SNI Digital Innovations in Learning is pleased to present the Jorge Lazarev Lecture Series on the Origin and Development of Ideas in the Clinical Neurosciences. This course series consists of 7 one-hour lectures with discussion. The speaker will be Jorge Lazarev, Emeritus Professor of Neurosurgery, Department of Neurosurgery, Ronald Reagan, UCLA Medical Center, Los Angeles, California, USA. This is Dr. Lazarev's introductory comments to his lecture series. And we quote, "The most significant number of patients with diseases of the central nervous system live in low and middle-income countries for no other reason than the majority of people are living in low and middle-income countries." I'm going to start over. This is Dr. Lazarev's introductory comments to his lecture series, and we quote, "The most significant number of patients with diseases of the central nervous system live in low and middle-income countries for no other reason than the majority of people are living in low and middle-income countries. Nonetheless, neurosurgeons and neurologists from high-income countries author most research papers on clinical neurosciences. This disparity is prejudicial to the neurosciences as a whole. We designed the course as an introduction to some of the tools that promote the genesis and development of research ideas. This series of lectures are provided free to bring the advances in clinical and basic neuroscience to physicians and patients everywhere. 1 out of every 5 people in the world suffer from a neurologically related disease. Lecture 6, Introduction to the Development of the Nervous System, a Tool for Clinical Research in Pediatric Neurosurgery. The multiple representations of spina bifida.
So, this is the 6th lecture of our course, Origin and Development of Idea in Neuroscience, which is presented by Dr. Lazar.
Thank you. Thank you all. So, as we were saying now briefly, I will let me see if I share the screen. This is the one to share. And as we were saying now with Professor Hoss, what we will try, what we'll do next Friday, our last lecture, is the lecture will be as regular, about 1 hour. And then we will have half an hour of time that we would love to hear your thoughts, suggestions, what needs to improve, because this is the first of our conversations on this subject. Hopefully we will repeat this next year or in 6 months or whenever. I'm certain that I'm ready to learn from your thoughts, and everybody in the future will benefit from your experience. You are pioneers in this endeavor, no? I mean, nowhere in the world are doing similar things as we are doing here. So today there will be a couple of movies of some of from the surgery, and let me know if the transmission of the movement is of the action, no, is good, right? So here we at the start. The main concept of this lecture, of this series of conversations, is concept. Everything the concept, the conceptual understanding, the whole picture, and then you go to the little details. These two gentlemen over there, the gentleman on the right is Cristoforo Columbus. And Columbus is, as you know, is the first sailor who arrived to what we call America, and is the first who reported, because perhaps the Vikings were here before, but they did not report that they found this new land or this land. But the continent, as you know, from the top, from Alaska down to the south of Argentina to Ushuaia, or from pole to pole, is called America. It's not called Colombia. And why is that? Because the gentleman on the left, which was an important sailor, but compared to the other sailors, he wasn't that a big sailor. The gentleman on the left with the beard, his name is Amerigo Vespucio. Amerigo Vespucio. And he's the guy, he's the individual who said, introduced that concept. This is what we are seeing, is new land. There is something different. This is something new. And imagine this man reached to this conclusion just sailing around the tip of what is today Venezuela and taking notes here and there. He didn't have any idea that there was another ocean on the other side. He didn't have the idea that if you kept going west, you will reach finally China, as Columbus intended. And what I mean with this is, one thing is the physician, the surgeon, the fantastic surgeons, the fantastic physicians who observe something, describe something, describe a technique. But the other one is the other that doesn't have to be the most important surgeon in the world, who says, understands that the concept, no? So this is a, and today we'll introduce you to two concepts, which is a way that for you to make the analogy and use this conceptual way of thinking of the pathologies we will address to the pathologies that you are interested on. No? So to do succeed in research in neurosciences, or to succeed in researches in neurosciences, an absolute must is a conceptual understanding of the nervous system. And what is the nervous system? Because all those of you who receive the PDF already know the answer, but think about it. The digestive system does digestion, the cardiovascular, cardio, the reproductive system, reproduction, endocrine system, endocrine. But what does the nervous system? It's called the nervous system. Yeah, but what's the function of the nervous system? Why we have the nervous system at all? And the purpose of the nervous system is communication, is to communicate. In this moment, my whole nervous system is focused in this conversation. Your nervous system is focused in this conversation. But besides that, I have an awareness whether I am hungry or not, or how my body feels, whether I'm hot. So there is a communication between the outside, which we are doing now, and it's a communication with the inside through the autonomic nervous system. So that's the purpose of the nervous system, is to communicate. And when you see the patient of the with a pathology of the nervous system, as we discussed on the first lecture, you have to think, I mean, is this, how's the communication working? Is he able to move, to walk, to see, to understand, to comprehend, to answer? So that's the actual, if you think like that in this conceptual form, you will start working in a different way when you start doing clinical research. And the neuron is the core of the system. Yes, we have glia, but we have glia for the neuron. Yes, we have blood flow. We have blood flow for the neuron. Yes, we have cerebrospinal fluid. We have cerebrospinal fluid for the neuron. Everything is focused on the uses of the neuron. So to start a research career in clinical neurosciences, you need a conceptual understanding of the diseases of the nervous system in your own environment. You are now there in Baghdad, most of you, my understanding, you're all in Baghdad. Most of you are in Baghdad. So you are there, or at least in the Middle East or in neighboring countries, right? And that's where you have to start studying, focusing on the diseases of the nervous system that are available for you to understand and to study, which, by the way, are universal. If you have brain tumors, there are brain tumors here. If you have aneurysm there are aneurysms here. And today we will focus on neurotube defect, a subject that I purposely choose because I know something about it, but also because it's seldom explored and it's important. So, for example, you have this paper from 2018 called Study of Neurotube Defects at Al-Diwaniyah Province in Iraq. I'm sorry I didn't pronounce it, but perhaps well. So there you have it. And they are talking about they have a study of how many cases they have of neurotube defect. Yeah, compare that so many people living, it may be that the number is not that impressive, but think about it. They have 37 cases of neurotube defect per year. So this is 3 cases per month. I mean, I don't know if there is another neurosurgical disease. I don't think that they see 37 aneurysms a year in that province, or 3, or if they see, okay, they see 50. So we are talking about one province of your country who has the incidence. And if you want to see the entire paper, please let me know. I will send it to you, but it's available on the web. So we have one province in your wonderful country who has 37 cases a year. Wow, that's a great number of cases. So what is a neurotube defect? When we were just in the beginning of our lives, you see the cursor here, no cursor. This pink thing is the wall of the uterus. And this is how we all were in the beginning of our time. I mean, barely day one of our lives, no? And in day one of our life, the blue structure here is what gives our origin to the central nervous system and to the skin. Just this, I keep on with this drawing, with this animation, but just for you to watch. But basically, the emphasis is the neurotube is that blue line at the beginning of life. It's already there, present. You see, that's the issue that interests us in this moment. There are two layers, you know, ectoderm and endoderm, and the mesoderm is formed from the thinking, from the diffusion of the ectoderm. So what does it mean? You have one layer blue of which only one segment in the center, the primitive straight and the primitive node, will form the central nervous system. So our skin and our brain come from the same layer, the same layer. It's the same it's a thing over there. So how a layer of embryonic tissue, just this blue layer that you saw there, transforms into a system that perceives, interprets, and responds to the environment. So this issue was solved originally by the two individuals who are in the PTE, in the photo in your PDF, which is coming on the slides now. But what they had, Spellman and his student Magol. Spellman for this work got the Nobel Prize. Mangold died on very young on a home accident, on some event at her house, and she died. I mean, that's why. Otherwise, she would have been receiving the Nobel Prize as well. So, what they came to in 1920, yes, 100 years ago, they came with that concept. They say, how come this thing becomes everything else? So the concept that they came is they say, must be a nucleus, must be a structure that gives origin to the other ones. And as you can see, there is no paper, there is no laboratory. Yes, they did some experiment, which I will tell you now. But there was no sophistication. Everything was a conceptual thing, like Amerigo Vespucio saying, this must be a new continent. And Spellman and Mangold were saying, Spellman, they were saying, oh, maybe there is something. And they called that thing the organizer. Must be something that organizes there. And what they did, they get embryos from a chicken embryos in the yolk, no? Very young. And they were pulling parts of the embryo and attaching to the other part. And eventually, they got chickens with two heads or two nervous systems. Or chicken limbs in one thing or limbs on the other thing. They created this funny animals that they didn't survive. But conceptually, they say there must be something that later other researchers, later in life and in this century, they're still trying to define the molecular principles of the organizer. But the concept, that's why the two guys are remembered. No, for coming, there must be some organizer, which is a concept. So this is the image that we just saw now, right? So the blue thing, and you are looking at the blue structure from the top. You follow me there, right? Is it clear, Noor? No, I'm telling you. Yes, it's clear. You are looking, this is this. No, you are looking from the top. So you have in day 15, that means that 15 days after the conception, when our parents barely knew that what other mothers didn't think or didn't know that they were pregnant, and a size of 1 millimeter. So that thing, the organizer, by day 16, starts creating this groove, right? In order to have a tube, you need to have a groove. We are talking about a neural tube. Then the walls and the sides starts going up by day 18. And then the somites start forming by day 19. And then the tube starts closing. There is a closing of the tubes and the neural fold. So by day 22, when our parents were thinking that maybe the mother was pregnant, 4 millimeters, and then the embryonic age, and then thanks to that tube, to the neural tube, we create that structure from where the brain and the spinal cord and the whole nervous system develops. Of course, this is very, very simplified, but you understand that, or I hope that you get the message, that the neural tube is crucial to the development of the whole nervous system. And we have in Al Anhui province 37 cases per year where there is an imperfect folding or formation of the neural tube. Did you receive this well in an hour? I'm asking you because you are the first one there, or anybody who wants to answer. Did you see these images fairly well, no? With a good reception?
Yes, Dr. It's clear.
Yeah, it was good. Okay, beautiful. Yeah, because I was told, I mean, years ago with this Zoom problem, those images were not properly seen sometimes, no? Anyway, so we had this. And now, of course, when this thing closes, some of the posterior part will be sensory, the anterior part will be motor, and there are different molecules involved in them, the bone matrix protein, the sonic hedgehog, doesn't matter. The conceptual thing is what I want to transmit to you. Spellman and Mangold said, there must be something here. Let's find it out. Then later, let the biochemist and everybody else figure it out what is going on. No? And the neural tube is not just the folding of the neural tube. You need to have the neurons. Remember, we said the neurons are the essence of the nervous system. Yes, when we have glia, it's important. Glia is important. But the glia exists for the neurons. So this is this black thing in here is the center of the neural tube, no? Is the wall of the neural tube. That's the wall of the neural tube. And from the wall of the neural tube begins a cell cycle that forms the neurons. The neurons start from the wall of the neural tube. And they start replicating, and then they go up and they travel to the cortex, to the different areas of the cortex. And interesting, so you have two neurons and then they will start going up, and here on the left you have some drawing that shows you how the glia supports the growth and the progression of the neurons through that cell cycle. The interesting question that has not been answered yet is how the neuron knows where it has to go, or why, because a visual neuron is different to an auditory neuron, or a neuron from the motor cortex is different from a neuron from the hippocampus, and how they acquire their identity. But you see, there is this conversation, the second neuron escapes the boundaries of the neural tube and starts traveling towards the cortex. And that is to have this working properly, you need to have a good neural tube. In 37 people, 37 people per year in the province of Al Anhui, this event was not perfectly done. So there is in one province only in the country. going back in here, so we go to the study of the neural tubes of the Al-Anjoui province in Iran that I just mentioned now, and we then say, what happens over there? What happens over there? What happens here? Because we also have neural tube defects. What happened in Mexico? What happened in everywhere? You have environment and genetics. And both things alter the mechanism of the folate, of the folic acid. You have a decreased methylation, well, you can see there, alter protein function, and the tube doesn't close. The tube remains open. The folic acid is crucial for this, for the binding of the tube. If the folic acid, supposedly folic acid, as we understand now, maybe will be another factor, is not present or doesn't work for genetic or environmental factors, remains open. When I was in Erbil in 2009, one of the conversations over there we had, whether the increase of neural tube defects in the Kurdistan region was a consequence of the chemical war that happened years prior to that. So when you have a defect of the neural tube, you will have a defect on the closing in many, many levels of the body. See this child with an open mouth. His MRI is on top in here, and he had an encephalocelic, a part of the tube that is supposed to be around closing here, didn't close well, and a sac of cerebrospinal fluid went on. How this patient was diagnosed? It was diagnosed because he had repeated pneumococcal meningitis. Of course, there was a very, very tiny layer of skin, and the pneumococcal from the mouth kept on spreading into his body, and treated and treated until finally a very astute pediatrician said, open the mouth. Open the mouth, and there was encephalocele. And you see here other children, mostly from China, where I went many times. They have different areas of defect of the neural tube. Can be frontal, can be sphenoidal, can be parietal, can be occipital. And you see the MRIs that explain that. The most common one is this one, the myelomeningocele, the one on the bottom on the right, no? In case you don't see the cursor. The most common one in Iraq and everyone in the world, but the other ones are also present. If you read the paper of your colleagues from Al-Diwaji province, and I keep mispronouncing the name, I apologize, they say which type of neural tube defects those children up. So this is at the neural tube defect. You have a tube that is formed by the day 20, when barely our parents knew that we were coming, we already had the tube formed. The crucial thing of the forming of the tube is the closing. If the tube is not closed, there is a leakage. Leakage is a way of saying there is an extrusion, there is an hernia of tissue outside that can create different neurological problems. And we will not go to that in this moment. What I want to see is the conceptual thing. And the myelomeningocele is the most prevalent. We'll talk about myelomeningocele now. The child on the left is a child I treated when I was in Mexico. The statue on the right is an Olmeca pre-Columbian statue. As you can see, the Olmecas had also children with spina bifida, and you can see that the leg of the piece of art is really not robustly formed. The first drawings of myelomeningocele per se, that you can see over there in here underneath, were done by Dr. Tulp. Dr. Tulp, besides being a good drawer, is the famous character on the anatomy lesson by the Rembrandt. The main reason I'm pointing to this is just saying myelomeningocele, spina bifida, neurotube defects are there everywhere and in every century. So this is the myelomeningocele. These are three different cases. If you see this cursor here, you see a black line. This is actually the center of the neurotube, and the two red images on the side, particularly here you also see, but this is the best study. The two red images on the side are what you saw in the drawing, those when the bulging of the walls, and they fail to interclose very well. You can see this in well. And the level of damage is represented over there. Depends at what level the spinal cord is injured. If the spinal cord is injured at a very low level, L5 or S1, then will be sphincter problem and minor mobility problem. If it's much higher, besides the sphincter problem, that is a must in every myelomeningocele, that the child will have an imperfect ambulation, motor and sensory, you know, for obvious reasons. But you see here what's the failure of the closure of the cord is, no? So this being anterior, this being superior on top, this is like the child looks. I will try to go quickly here. So you see when you put a drop on the microscope, you see that line in the center, which is the tube that failed to actually fold. And then you start cutting freeing the cord from its arachnoid adhesion. And let me see over there here. Well, I will go slightly faster in here. And this is the spinal cord that doesn't have the shape of the spinal cord because it's like an open sausage. Here on top, if you can see my cursor, you see the cylinder of the normal cord. A cylinder, right? Like a tube. That part of the cord closed. This part of the cord didn't close, it's open. And that, you see, part of the good cord, this is the dura mater, and this is when the lesion has been dissected and been down, and then you create a plane of dura to close over the defect. You see, this is dura here, and you close the defect to prevent exposure. You basically are repairing the wound. The reason I show this is because it clearly emphasizes what is a neurotube defect. A neurotube defect is precisely the system in which the tube failed to close, most likely because of a problem of folic acid. Here we are putting a patch of dura to suture the defect. So let me see if there is anything on the no, perfect. I was just checking on the chats if there was something pending. So the big question is why this thing happens. There are associations that I don't believe them very much, and I mention them just for intellectual honesty, no? Age, parity, obesity, maternal illness, hot tube use, come on. Anti-seizure medicine, yes. What is clear is that image that you see on the right in here, that there is like a line in countries who are well industrialized, the population is adequately fed, those countries to the left of this line usually have less incidence of neural tube defect, or spina bifida in this case. Countries who are like Africa, Asia, many areas of Latin America, the incidence increases. The idea was, is, still is, that folic acid ingestion, taking folic acid before pregnancy, is useful, makes a difference. The interesting thing, you see that lady smiling, the lady from Guatemala, smiling there. Guatemala had a very high incidence in one time. We had one birth every 600. Imagine every 600 birth, one. It's huge incidence. You in Iraq have one every 1,000. So that was one every 600. So people decided to fortify with folic acid the flour with which the people made the cake, the tortilla. Massive fortification, lots of money from the WHO. All the tons of flour were fortified. The incidence did not decrease, the same. So what was the issue? There was a fungi in the corn that prevented the action of the folic acid. So that led to people asking that they wash the corn that is grading now, that they wash that corn with leech. Of course, it worked, didn't work, but the emphasis of this is to show you the complexity of the problem, the attention that is paid to the problem, because children born with neural tube defects, with spina bifida, fortunately, the mortality is very low, but the quality of life is really impaired by the motor and sensory problems, and sometimes also by the intellectual development. And that is an anchor in the whole family. We have to find a way to prevent this condition. And when the condition is there, we have to find a way to treat it in a better way. And you see where the problem is. You see in this paper from the Epidemiology of Neural Tube Defects in Saudi Arabia that we discussed last lecture, you see there is a group of people that say folic acid administered during the first trimester. And conceptually, you already know by looking at the movie that the tube is closed, already closed, much before the first 30 days. So taking folic acid in the second trimester or in the second months of the first trimester is completely useless. Because as you can see here in the film, by day 21, the tube starts closing. By day 25, for sure, the tube is already closed. So there's no point in administering folic acid in the first trimester. And this is what the colleagues from Saudi Arabia also found. Other problem is the late closure, other problem that you can do for your future clinical research if you want to do research. So this is a newborn with a spina bifida. There is still normal tissue, I mean tissue, affected tissue, not normal tissue, but what happened if the child comes 2 or 3 weeks after birth, there is granulation on top of the and the spinal cord. Thus, this affect the neurological development of the child? Yes or no? We don't know. That is a subject of research for you. You just can look at the level of which the spinal cord is damaged. Say, for example, here can be L3, L4. Okay, so this child will have L3, L4 down, impaired, L2 up, normal. But if this child on the right side, who also has an L3, L4, will have the same neurological outcome if he would have been operated, he or she would have been operated on the first week. We don't know that. Why we don't know that? Because in this part of the world, those children are operated on the first day of birth, after birth. They're transferred immediately to neurosurgical center and operated. In Guatemala, where I worked for many years as a visiting surgeon, those kids come 2, 3, 4 months after. But as I couldn't do the follow-up of the children, I came back always to the United States, so I don't know if the same level of lesion provokes or causes same neurological damage, whether it's repaired at birth or repaired later in life. My point is, you can see there is a subject for research. And in your own faculty medical school in Baghdad, they report 147 cases in 3 years. That is 49 cases per year. 49 cases per year is 4 cases per month. It's a huge amount of cases. And I praise immensely the authors, Professor Al-Salchi and Abdul Hussein, for being so open and honest. And I think they are exaggerating. They just decided anything that is not perfect is a complication. I don't think they had that much complications as they mentioned. But there you see, in your hospital, in your town, and this is the Faculty of Medicine Journal of the Medical School of Baghdad, is published there. You have it there. You have the subject there to start a clinical research in a conceptual way. What's the tech concept is? The concept is, for example, in this case of complications. Are the complications affecting the life of the child a year after? Maybe the complication is just a nuisance. Yes, a nuisance is a problem. You have to operate again. You have to give antibiotic, all those things. But what happened to the child? Does this thing affect the child? And how can you explain with your knowledge of neuroanatomy and neurophysiology this conceptual question? This is a fantastic paper, and I send it to you anytime you want, or you can find it by yourselves on the web. But again, you see, it's a fantastic paper. I praise the authors. But the next step for you to do is to answer at the conceptual question. Conceptual question, if the nervous system is to communicate, how is the level of communication or the capacity for communication that those children have? Does it make a difference, complication? Which complication makes a difference? Yes, no, sorry. And the last thing, tether cord is another issue related. If you look at the paper on complications, they mention tether cord. But we have authors from Saudi Arabia, your neighboring country, there you are, who report on this interesting phenomenon called tether cord, 35 patients in 7 years. So 5 patients a year, that's a lot. 5 patients a year in one hospital, in one university, in one town, whoa, that's a lot. And a phenomenon that they call tether cord. What is the conceptual think of a tether cord. And this is the three slides I added. That's why you had a new PDF. When we were born, our hip and our head, they were close. We were babies, right? Remember, the spinal cord is attached, is part of the brain. It's not a separate entity. As we were growing, as the thickness and the width of the vertebra increased, our torso increased in size. And we were moving up. Our head is far away from our hips, right? I'm not talking about the length of the legs. I'm talking about the length of the torso. And as a consequence, the spinal cord moves up. That's why when you do a lumbar puncture in a newborn baby, think about it, it's not like an adult. In an adult, you can do a lumbar puncture at level L3, L4, or L4, L5 without any problem. There's no spinal cord there. But in a baby, be very careful because the cord is there. You can puncture the baby, puncture the actual cord because it's lower. So if that movement going up is tethered, is anchored, is impeded by the something, the cord stretches, the cord suffers, and the patient has symptoms of a spinal cord damage. So there are three forms of tethered cord. One, the thick phylum terminale, you will see a movie about that, the spinal lipoma, or the myelomeningocele. Remember, when you are closing the myelomeningocele, you are closing and the fresh cord is attached to the fresh tissue. That creates a scar. And this creation of the scar anchors the spinal cord. So the conceptual, yes, that word, the conceptual pathogenesis is that you have a traction. This was done in a cat. This is the spinal cord of a cat. They put a weight on the end of the phylum terminale, and they were increasing the weight so that the poor cat or cats had the spinal cord stretch and stretch and stretch and stretch. And yes, of course, they suffer because there is a decrease in the redox potential, the decrease in the blood flow, and there is a decrease in glucose uptake. And this is what the colleagues in Saudi Arabia, at least in 5 patients per year, were actually seeing. And this is what you may see in every patient who had a myelomeningocele operated because of the tethering of the cord. But you come to those ideas or those conceptions if you have a concept of what a cord is. So next time you go to a ward, a pediatric neurosurgery ward, you start seeing the whole picture, the whole problem. You understand that the concept, like Americo Vespucci. So this is a tether cord after a myelomeningocele. I sort of moved the MRI. You see, this is the MRI, and there it is. The scar created of the closure. You see, the myelomeningocele is there. It was closed, properly closed. This is skin on top. But there is a scar because of the suture of the dura that you saw in the film just a few slides before. This is a lipoma. You have seen kids like that, I'm sure. This is the MRI of a lipoma. You see that the cord, this spinal cord, by this time, this spinal cord is already in L5, L4, and this is an older child. Should have been much higher. And the picture from the surgery, you see here is the lipoma already reduced, and here is the spinal cord underneath. So this lipoma was adhered to the skin and was tethering the cord, creating cord damage. Spina bifida occulta. Kid, you will see for sure a kid that has a tuft of hair over there with a small dimple or a small dimple in there. And I just, this is The spina bifida occulta is a problem. Remember that the blue line, that the skin and the nervous system came from the same layer. Well, there has to be a separation of those layers that sometimes fails, and you have a spina bifida occulta, something tethering the cord over there. And here, this is a very rare case, but that's the idea. You see, a kid, this was in South Africa, he had a puff of hair. Remember, hair puffs in the middle, hair, skin, dermato, nervous, midline. Think of the animation that you saw a couple of times already. And this kid had a bony spur. That the photo is not perfect. And you see, once we remove the bony spur, is one part of the cord here, the other part of the cord in there. There was this bony spur that was tethering the cord. You get the concept. Just this is for the amusement of the dead. And then another one that our colleagues from Saudi Arabia mentioned, the thickened phylum terminale. You remember the phylum terminale is the extension of the cord. Sometimes that phylum terminale is thick and doesn't allow the cord to move up and down. When you bend, when anybody bends to touch their toes or do some exercise, our cord slides inside of the canal. But if you have a thickened phylum terminale, it won't slide. Then you keep on bending, and then you keep on damaging, and one day you may or may not have a problem. In this surgery, you will see how we find the phylum terminale, and when we divide it, the phylum terminale disappears from the surgical field because it is under tension. So this is a L5S1, this is the dura mater. Those are the nerve roots. Those are the nerve roots, and then I think it's me holding this that we identify as the phylum terminale. We stimulate just to be sure it's not a nervous system, and then the resident, you see how he's shaking the hands, that's because it's the resident, goes and cuts the thing, tries to cut the phylum, cuts the phylum, and the phylum disappears. Was a phylum, a thickened phylum terminale, which is not an issue described by Lazarev in the United States talking in a Zoom conference to medical students from Baghdad. It's in the paper from the college from Saudi Arabia. They're there. They had like seven of those cases. So the point being, again, Tether cord syndrome, a study of 35 patients. Fantastic study. I praise the doctors, but they didn't take this course and they don't explain. At the end, they say the study of the natural history of tether cord syndrome showed that 68% of the patients over 2 years of age develop progressive neurological deficits. Why 2 years? What happens at 2 years that makes such an important rule? I don't know. It's the rule that I follow as well. When I operated patients in here and I operated on that patient that you saw, this is part of my own cases from many years ago. But why 2 years? Explain. And that is the task for you as a clinical, future budding clinical neuroscientist. Yes, you will be asked to go from one lab to another lab to bring a pipette, to do the thing, to measure that. But when you are free of that, sit down and think, how can I explain? Explain is the issue. This is one of my patients in Guatemala, and I made it as a symbol over there. Okay, you can see the globe, meaning this everywhere. You can see Guatemala, who has a tremendous problem. But what is important? See the child. The child already, he doesn't have a myelomeningocele, he had a lipoma. You can see his feet are already damaged. but it's less than 2 years. It's less than 2 years, and you can see his feet is already done like that, small feet, no? So what is happening? Why is the 2 year? I don't know. I don't have the answer. I just want to install in you the curiosity, if possible, to answer those questions in a conceptual fashion. And there are plenty of evidence in your country, in your region, in what is some of Saudi Arabia, but in your country as well, that those things are there. There are a problem for the population that you, for your compatriots. This is a clinical problem for them, believe me. And if you can solve or begin or raise the interest in the Minister of Health, whatever, that we need to pay attention to those things, maybe you will be the, I'm sure, I am sure that in the 40 of you, 39 of you that have been so steadily following, I'm sure that a great majority will be brilliant, because you need to be brilliant to be listening to me and so late in Baghdad, you know. Anyway, with this, we just finished. And as I said, and I repeat for those who may have arrived later, on Friday, we will go, I will make a 45 minutes presentation about one case that summarizes everything. It's medical, ethical. Maybe I will mention Chiari. But then once we finish with the lecture, I will deeply appreciate, and Professor Haas also will deeply appreciate, if you share your thoughts with us. Prepare your thoughts. How can we do better? How can we improve? And what the things that were positive for you in this series of 7 lectures that will be next week? Yes. We already have the site, a Surgical Neurology Digital. They just want to review quickly the videos, just in case some untoward on wanting. There's nothing in the videos to be worried about. But yes, all the series of lectures will be uploaded, and you will have direct access to them to go back and review. And you have the PDFs. And now that we are coming to an end, is then that I can start writing a text, because I understand where we went, how we arrived. I had a different plan in the beginning, and through the letters of some of you, I was changing a little bit. Some of you wrote me and asked me questions, and then so I change those accordingly. But yes, you will have a text. Yes, you will have the access to the video. And yes, we'll see you next Friday. And now I am open for questions.
First of all, I want to thank you, Dr. Lazar, for this nice informative. I just want to have some comments before seeing if more questions are there. First, I want to say that even as a neurosurgeon practicing in the Middle East, I didn't know about the incidents that much for spina bifida. It's an eye-opening for me. And I don't know those paper from Diwania and from Baghdad. Actually, the one from Baghdad is from the Dean of University of Baghdad, and the one from Saudi Arabia. I think I'm not aware at all that the magnitude of the problem, this number one. And number two, I think I just want to confirm your message to the student that, yeah, you can start to think about solution for this real problem. And I think one of the impacts that the example of Dr. Lazarev said, that there's a lot of way to save lives. And this is what you are doing now, to explore more about the medical option, the diseases, to understand what you can do for as part of your future, how to help patients. So helping patient is a common understanding, but how you can do it. I think for people understand the explanation for today and the example Professor Lazarev said, this is a real challenge. And if you can change the life of those patients, you will change the life, obviously, for their family. And even they are not a fatal diseases, like a direct fatal disease, but those are obviously devastating. I think not all medical students understand how much you have. And I think it's part of our responsibility that if such disease, as proved today, it's already available in our cities, so it's part of our duty to think of solutions through research, and that will make things more valuable. That's it. That's my comment.
Thank you, Professor. Thank you. Thank you. Anybody has an ask a question regarding this? So
we already put in the chat a question about the which one from which city you can go. You can see it, Dr. Lazarev, as well. Just an idea about the cities. It's from inside Iraq and from UAE and from Saudi Arabia. You can see it in the chat. Also, I will send it to you later. And I think Rani has a question.
Yeah, Rani.
Hello, Professor.
Hi, Rani.
Thank
How
you
are
for
you?
Your presentation. I'm doing well. How are you? As usual, your presentation was magnificent, especially when you mentioned that pediatrician who discovered the presence of neural tube defect in a patient who had recurrent meningitis. That was really inspiring for me. I have a question regarding neural tube defect. Despite the great advancement, are there any unresolved questions or challenges in the research field? And I'm, by other words, like what areas are researchers are focusing on currently in order to address those challenges? And thank you.
Yeah, there are, and I am recording this, and I say that the malformed, the people who are not formed, so what we call like any other humans, rarely get too much attention. People focuses more on the attention of tumors, cancers, that, and the effect and the number of the incidence of the malformed is huge. So the areas of the research are two. For clinical neurosurgery, precisely, and I think that we achieved that doing. You saw that child, Simpson was the child's name, and I'm not giving the name as well. Simpson, that child, we sutured with a dura patch in order to prevent the tethering of the cord, no? With the idea that the dura patch would not, we failed, it tethered. The cord tether, we needed to untether that many years after. So our idea didn't work. But the idea being, okay, how can we do things to prevent the complications from happening? But what we did with many of our children, all our children have, and I didn't do as many as, because we don't see that many. We see 3 or 4 cases a year here in the United States. For one reason, perhaps folic acid, and for the other reason being abortion. Abortion is allowed here. So when the child is found to be spina bifida, so when we see those numbers that decrease on cases in United States, Canada, Germany, we don't know how much is because of folic acid and how much is because of other reasons. If you go to your cereal, do you have cereals in Iraq, as they have here in the United States? The cereal box? if you have cereal boards, I will take a picture of one of the cereal boards here. Cereal
Yeah, like,
boards, huh?
yeah, we have cereal boards, like you
Okay,
said.
go and look to the cereal boards. You will see there is folic acid there.
Yeah,
You will
that's
see that they
amazing.
put folic acid in the cereal boards, but they don't put in enough quantity. You really have to take 3 bowls of folic acid to actually fulfill the thing. But there is folic acid in the cereal boards because of this, because of people trying to prevent. Check on the, it says folic acid. Usually it's 200 nanograms or something. It should be 400, but that's fine. So the but a way of doing surgically is you have a level of damage. Say for example, L3, the myelomeningocele is L3. Now, if you operate with a microscope, if you have the senior surgeon operating, if you really take careful care of the spinal cord, maybe, and it's happened, we have seen that happening, that the level of damage goes down. So what was an L4 ends up being an L5 because you took care of that thing. Why we didn't publish that, or I didn't publish, and many other didn't publish, because this sounds like bragging, no? Look, I took 20 patients with this demil damage. I operated on the patient, and the patient is 1 degree better. But that's it's an interesting way on the other side, on the complication. So if you say complication is not only a couple of days extra in the hospital and more money or a less money, complication is a child who cannot go to school or cannot finish first. There are children with myelomeningocele who are furthermore as a homework, go and check the chairwoman of neurosurgery of Ann Arbor, ANN Arbor in Michigan, an important hospital in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The head of neurosurgery is Dr. Marescu, who was born with a myelomeningocele. She goes with one of those chairs on there, no? And they lower the table because she's sore. So you can have a normal development, but it's an interesting question. Why Dr. Marescu had a normal development if we know that the neural tube and the neurons start from the center and they migrate, and she became neurosurgeon and chair of neurosurgery, and then other did similar way, cannot go through third grade. Why is that? No? So there are many areas of the research for you in the moment. And the big research, of course, is how can we prevent this from it actually happening? Prevent through pills or not or something. No? And why the thing closed? Imagine this is a magnificent piece of magic trick. You have a something open there, and then starts folding, 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 closes, and boom, and you have a brain. Wow, what's that? You know, how this happened? Yeah, I hope I answered your question, Rania, but I always talk a lot, so you know.
No, doctor, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
A question.
Yes,
Thank
please.
you so much for the informative lecture, doctor. Actually, I was wondering through the lecture about what would be the possible changes or like contribution that can be done by us as a medical student to help in solving such a problem. I mean, is there anything we can do in this stage as a medical student
Yes, when you go
in general, not
to
only
the
the spine of the
when you go to the hospital, just start making a record on your own. Say if you see at a patient with different forms of neural tube defects, anencephaly, encephalocele, you will see them because, as you can see, there are many there, no? And then, if possible, respectfully asking permission to the mother, you all have a phone. Take a picture just of the lesion, not of the face or nothing. Make a note. This is a lesion L3, L4, L5. Politely ask what type of lesion is happening. And I say as a medical student, because you have to study, you have to work, you have to prepare for your exams, you have to do something like that. So in that way, you say you will collect 10, 12, or 5, or 3 patients. And then you go and ask them, contact the family a year from now, a year after that time, and then see what happened to that child. And then follow the story of the child. This is as a medical student, no? I mean, because you have 97 things to do. Just follow, if you follow 2, 3, 4 of those patients, will be incredible. And Sama went off of the, but.
My curiosity. Thank you so much, Dr. Yes.
No, no, but did you receive, it's not just so I repeat, I say.
No, I get it, yes.
You actually got it. Take a picture from the family and ask the family permission to contact them a year from now. You will see, you will have 5 or 6 patients, natural history of spina bifida in your country, in Iraq. That is a paper worth for the Journal of Neurosurgery.
Yeah, that's great.
Because
thank
you actually
you so much,
follow. And then the story of the parents, Mr. and Mrs. So-and-so, tell me this, that's their problem, a narrative history. That will be. Absolutely.
Yeah. All
right, thank you, sir. Dr. Lazarev, before the end, I just want to add also another option, which is brought today by your lecture, is that most of the local hospitals have some records already. So maybe the student can ask the department. I can collaborate with all the student, whether in Iraq or outside.
Absolutely.
Yes. You understand that for general neurosurgeon, they are doing definitely neurotube defect, but if we reach to them and we will tell them that we are interested to build a series from this hospital about neural tube defect, he will be happy, the student, and that surgeon will be in the authors, and we will have your supervision, at least to develop some local records. If we succeed in a few hospitals, that will be a good thing, that at least we have some series from some of the hospitals to know what we already have. And then there may be a regional difference, as you say, there may be cultural, environmental, whatever factors, and which can be studied later in another studies.
Yes,
well.
Absolutely. That's a yes, absolutely, absolutely. Then you can go, and then you even can, from the series of patients that you collect, I am obsessed with his personal history, maybe if you write a letter or what is the most appropriate, a polite manner of asking and seeing what happened, or if the patients come back every month or so or every year for some form of clinic, what is happening to those patients and what the families are actually having. Yes, you are absolutely right. Going back, asking the collaboration of the general surgeons to take care will be outstanding. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, they can go one way, at least in Iraq. I think in UAE or in Saudi Arabia, there are more developed records. But in Iraq, the only way that we can do that is we go to the neurosurgery department, having the cases, and then we go to the records, having the phone number, and the student can call the patient one by one to understand the follow-up and outcome. This is how we do, at least for our vascular cases. We can do the same for this category of patient.
Absolutely. An idea, and then you may also see how many of those myelomeningoceles are tetra cord, how many they suffer from the tetra cord. I mean, it is amazing. I mean, yes, absolutely. The colleagues from Saudi Arabia who described the tetra cord syndrome, they had some few with myelomeningoceles, but compared to the number of myelomeningoceles they have in their country, they only report 7 myelomeningoceles. So, come on, only 7 out of the hundreds of cases, that may be a misdiagnosis, no? And we may not be helping through your fantastic work to cure the disease, but we will improve the quality of life.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, then. So
I just want to say that for people going like if you are the surgeon or if you are the doctor responsible for telling the family that they will have a myelomeningocele and their child will be paralyzed for life potentially, that's very, very tough time. And once you face this situation, you will understand most of them, at least in our culture, they would prefer that to tell them that their child is dead rather than to say they will be paralyzed for life. And this is how devastating for the families is it, in addition to the patient. So I think that's just, I want to tell the student about that because they may not realize initially the impact of such disease.
Yeah, often happens, and I'm sure happens the same in because in the study that we showed last week and repeated today again from Saudi Arabia, they say that the problem of misdiagnosis is of the ultrasound, that the technicians or physicians do the ultrasound just to see where is the placenta and that the heart is beating without focusing on the diagnosis. Many times here was a common thing of the family who just discovered that the child had a myelomeningocele, so they have a conversation with the neonatologist and a pediatric neurosurgeon about what the possibilities of the outcomes are and all those things. And it's a harrowing decision, as you're saying. Yeah, many families will, absolutely. No, that's a highly understandable. And I will say that's universal, no?
Yeah, it's even if ethically challenging that those decisions, especially with the new advances, some people suggest the intra. What's your opinion, just to have an idea for the student as well, about the intrauterine treatment of such cases? I know it's early, but what's your opinion,
Dr. Yeah, Lizar? The intrauterine cases, I may address briefly that next week. They reduce the incidence of a Chiari type 2 malformation. They have some improvements in the spinal cord. The big, big issue with the children with Tetter cord syndrome or myelomeningocele, of course, and lipoma are the sphincters, no? The functioning of the urinary and the rectal sphincter, bladder and rectum, no functioning. Thus, there is sometimes motor improvement, rarely with the sphincter. And in utero surgery has not improved so far the cases of improving on the sphincter. Also, theoretically, you are putting the mother in danger as well. So far, is a very imperfect thing, and maybe we will be understanding better later, no? Because by the time, the issue is, you see that the cord is open, right? There is an open cord. That open cord is chafed by the amniotic fluid. So it is already damaged. Yes, you may reduce something, you may, all those things, but the cord is open, it's there. You saw that the pictures of the newborn child, no? And the other one, yes, is protected somehow from a layer of arachnoid or granulose tissue sometimes. But basically, that part of the cord is not protected with the bone or the dura, and the constant beating of the heartbeat impairs the functioning of the cord, no? But hopefully, intrauterine one day will actually make some difference, no? I think that prevention, understanding, and also understanding there are cases, I had in my career, I operated on the child and then on the child's daughter, because that child became a 20 years after she became a 20-year-old woman, became pregnant. There's no impediment from pregnancy. And she was taking folic acid since birth, more or less, no? And still, their child had a myelomeningocele too, mother and daughter. So there are issues that we still don't understand on neurodevelopment.
Thank you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. So are we done for the day? Yeah, no? Perfect. Thank you. Thank you very much, all of you. And see you next Friday. And the videos are coming. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this presentation. The material provided in this program is for informational purposes and is not intended for use as diagnosis or treatment of a health problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional. Please fill out your evaluation of this video to help us improve our programming and for our application for CME credit. This recorded session is available free on snidigital.org. Send your questions, comments, suggestions, and applications for CME credit to ausman@snidigital.org. This series of lectures is supported by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation, owner of SNI and SNI Digital, and the Waymaster Corporation, producers of The Leading Gen, a television series, Silent Majority Speaks, Role Models, and the Medical News Network. Thank you.